Hey there, welcome to Journeys of Empowerment, the podcast that's on a mission to spark agency in each and every one of us. I'm your host, Michiel Soetjiet-Rijt, and in this show, we'll be diving into real-life stories, personal challenges, and incredible transformations with inspiring role models for social impact. Whether you're navigating on your own journey or helping others on theirs, this space is for you. But before we dive in, I'd like to take a moment to thank our first sponsor, Neotopia, for believing in our mission. Neotopia empowers leaders, both formal and informal, to influence positive behavior change through proven organizational behavior management. Their training and coaching help teams create lasting culture shifts and drive performance with positive reinforcement. For more info, check them out at neotopia.nl. Today's guest is Navid Mohammadi, a passionate social entrepreneur and founder of Shekson, an organization on a mission to empower international graduates by connecting them with professional networks and alumni for career guidance. Navid's journey into social impact was influenced by his own early childhood experiences, which planted the seeds for his belief in the power of informed decision-making. Throughout his career, he emphasized the importance of cultivating resilience, which he views as being rooted in three essential pillars. With a PhD in supply chain and operations management, Navid is dedicated to creating impactful solutions that addresses the challenges faced by students and professionals navigating the job market. In this episode, we'll explore how Navid's life experiences have shaped his mission and the foundational principles guiding his work. Here we go. So, Navid, welcome at my place HQ of Journeys of Empowerment.
Thank you, Michiel, for having me. Thank you.
I really love that you were here, and we first ate lunch. So it was for the first time you ate risotto, right?
Yes, very true.
Okay. And you said that your wife is all really loving Italian kitchen.
She is, yes.
And do you cook yourself at home?
I do. I love barbecues. I'm a meat person. I love barbecues. Not very sustainable, but that's what I love.
No, but it's an honest answer. And but it would be a great surprise. I won't raise the bar any higher today, but for now, did you surprise her with making... And it isn't a surprise, of course, anymore, because we are broadcasting this podcast. I realize myself now. I was asking as a surprise to cook the menu you just ate for her.
I need to learn how to cook that.
For sure.
But yes, I like to surprise her with the food also. Yeah, for sure.
The whole way we met... Actually, it's interesting. We met at the DNNL cohort 2024.
True, yeah.
Where you were pitching Shekson. Maybe good for the listener to first take a step back. What is DNNL about, and what was the cohort, and what did you learn there before we deep dive into Shekson and further on the road of your path?
Yes, sure. DNNL stands for Dutch New Narrative Lab, where they are focused on helping entrepreneurs who are into doing social impact, so social enterprises, where they want to actually make some impactful changes. And they are also focused on underrepresented founders. So, and also having like a migrant background, I was in that category.
Cool. And how did it help you?
I think from different phases. So they have different workshops that basically help you with a bit of training on different levels. But besides that, I would say the network that they bring in, the people that they know, the connections that they can make, this is a big thing, especially if you are international if you don't know that much of people. And if you're new to this entrepreneurship world, that network opens many doors, for sure.
For sure, for sure. And you were there pitching Shaxson?
Yes, of course, yes.
And what is Shaxson all about? And also, what is the mission of Shaxson? Because I know it, of course, but I really love the mission.
Yes, true. Shaxson stands for Sharing Experiences Online. And the idea, our mission is helping students and early graduates, specifically focusing on internationals, to gain information, being able to make an informed decisions about their careers, helping them feel confident and supported, and being able to build their careers on.
Mm. Great mission. Ambitious mission.
Yes.
And what is the stage of the company right now? Where are you at?
So right now, we are running our pilots. We are organizing events. We are inviting alumni, successful international graduates, working in good companies, bringing them back to share their tips and tricks, talk about their how they made it there, challenges they faced, how they overcome those challenges, to simply give some ideas to these young international students who are trying to navigate the same way, and also bringing them the network we just talked about. Mm. For them also, you need to put yourself in a position of an international to understand that these people not necessarily have the network and don't know enough about the companies, about their cultures, how open they are in order to be hiring international young graduates, and also not knowing too much about anything. So these alumni have a lot of information that when they are going back, talking with the community, they can provide significant amount of changes in the perspective of the young students or graduates to make a better decisions for themselves, which company, how, and where suits me best.
And can you give a few examples of the part not knowing? Because there's a lot of knowledge which is in common to have at a certain age growing up in a certain country, but which information is really missing. For instance, which information for you when you came to the Netherlands was specifically is and was specifically helpful?
That's true. So what's happening is that when you come from an international country, specifically out of EU, and then there might not be the same companies operating in those countries. For me, when I arrived, I did my PhD in Germany, if you know. And then there, when I arrived, I didn't know the name of the companies. Famous ones, big consultancies that everyone knows here. I didn't know. I had to learn them because those are not existing in my country. And the same holds for international students. Imagine you have done your bachelor somewhere, and then now you're arriving in Netherlands for a master's. It's just 2 years. You're busy with the courses. You're busy with the learning the lifestyle, learning the culture. Maybe you're learning the language also, trying to. And it's difficult to keep up with the name of the companies, learning about them, learning about the opportunities they have, being aware if these companies are open to hire you as an international. Are they really into diversity? Are they welcoming you? These kind of things are important, specifically culture-wise also. So there are many, we had a talk with career developments at universities, and they were like, we have very good international students, but we have a difficult time convincing companies to hire them. They usually fail in the interview level because culture-wise, they have been taught to, for example, be polite. And when polite means in my culture, I'm Iranian, right? And in my culture, you don't talk about your capabilities, right? So you try to be humble. That's the polite way of you representing yourself. So you want to show what you can do in the job, in action. However, the culture here, I came to notice, is quite different. So you might actually even overstating what you're capable of to get the job interview. And that will perceived as confidence. And that's something that the employer might be interested in. And that's why many internationals will fall below the bar for these companies, because they are not well representing themselves. So these are like tricks and things that they need to prepare. We need to prepare the international graduates to know how to even represent themselves in the job interviews, and also when they enter the company, how to merge into the culture of the company.
And I can imagine this is very valuable for the international graduates. On the other hand, what about the employers? Are you also thinking with Czechson to focus on education, educating the employer side, or are you primarily or only focusing, and that's good, focus is good, but there's no right or wrong, but are you also thinking about with Czechson educating the employers about all the cultural differences and what's needed, or are you primarily going to focus on the graduates? What is your aim?
That's a very good question, Michael. So what we're trying to touch here is to helping international graduates get into the right positions for themselves. That's the main mission. However, the problem that we are touching is retention of international talent, which actually is the problem of the government and also industry companies. Right now, we see that more than half of 54% of international graduates leave Netherlands after the first year of graduation. After 5 years, only 25% remains.
Wow.
Yes. This is a huge talent loss. This is a waste of talent.
But this also is also the reason why they leave. Because is it highly assumption that we think the reason is not getting on board in the Netherlands?
The number of studies on this topic is very limited. There is only one study by Fontys Universities where they dive deep into the details of that. Of course, we have some people coming from EU that they might actually want to go back, do things that we don't focus on them also. Mm-hmm. But there are a big ratio of international graduates coming from out of EU. And they study here. They put their parents' investment into these studies, and they want to study. They want to stay. They want to build a career here. And the difficulty that was identified by that study was that these students don't have the network. They don't know what to expect from the job market. They don't know the companies. Most of the students actually get a job are through their supervisors, through their professors, and many actually struggle. They don't know from where they should start. They don't know which companies they should apply for. They don't know how to prepare themselves for the job market interviews. And that's a big drop. And we know from the government side also, this is a big problem because we have over 400,000 vacancies in the job market that we cannot fill. We simply don't have enough employees to fill those spots.
Or employees who doesn't want or not... that are not the jobs employees are looking for.
So the number of jobs available is higher than the number of people looking for jobs. Mm. That's simple. And at the other side, we have lots of international talents already here, invested in their studies. They want to stay, but they cannot find a job. How ironic is that? And that's where we jump in, that to be able to help these students to prepare for those vacancies, to apply for those vacancies, be able to contribute to the development of the country when they want to stay.
Before we dive deeper into what makes me really curious, and also, of course, in our pre-conversation and also in our lunch and time we spent already together, for me it's clear that there is a really intrinsic motivation behind this. And but before we dive deep into the intrinsic motivation and what led you on this path towards your mission, one step back, what are you doing right now? Is this a 100% focus of you, or are you besides doing also another job, or how do you balance it with financial obligations you have yourself?
Yeah, true. So, you know, I'm also an international. I'm still on visa, so I need to have a job, right?
Yeah,
yeah, sure. That's a joke. But I'm a part-time lecturer at Tilburg University in the supply chain management department. And that's where the income comes from. And also on the side, 60% at the university, 60% on the Shekson. And yeah, so this is how I divide the weeks.
Yeah, okay. And about the university where you are lecturing, how diverse is your class when it comes to supply chain and operations? How diverse is it?
I need to look at the numbers to be specific about that. But I know that the certain ratio of international students also are there. There are some universities that are more international. There are a bit less, but let's not dive too deep into that.
Of course. All right. Then very interested in, and I believe, and I'm convinced the audience also is, what is fueling your intrinsic driven motivation to step into this specific meaningful area where Shekson is heading?
I think I started the journey like a year and a half ago when I was talking with international students about their hassles, their troubles, whatever they are going through. When I was talking with them, it was interesting because they were mentioning a few things. You notice a pattern happening over and over where people talk about like how stressed they are when they're getting closer to the job market, how they feel unprepared for the job market, some of them said, well, like, this is the saving of my parents I'm bringing in. I have a huge investment here. I don't know, should I do a master? Should I study further or should I go to the job market? I don't know what to do. And that feeling of being lost, that feeling of the moment of the decision that you're scared of making a mistake because simply mistakes is costly, right? Either time or money or whatever. So mistakes just mess up with your resources, and that's what you don't want to have. And I felt very much resonated. That felt like I could feel the pain. So it's not just hearing it, but I felt the pain because I was there myself in different places in my life. I was there myself when I was thinking of making a decision, how it's going to be, when you're afraid, because most of the time you don't know, right? So you decide on a path, you try very hard for it, you do put a lot of effort in it, but you're not sure if it's going to work out, if it's going to be a good decision at the end. No one knows, but the feeling was very strong for me also. And I think this is quite rooted back in my childhood. I think we had a very quiet luxury life when I was a kid, up to 6, 7. My dad went bankrupt for some reasons, so with all the good intentions, he made a few decisions and all went wrong. And that was something that he could never back off from it. Right? Mm-hmm. So this was something he could never compensate for. And that's, and I felt that, right? I was 9, 10 years old when I felt like money is a limited resource in our household from now on. And then I felt how much pressure my family was into. And I felt like, okay, I should be careful then.
If you say I felt that, can you still recall the feeling right now?
Yes, yeah.
I can see it, but the listener can't see that. But it does something with you, right?
Yes, very fresh, very fresh. I still feel that. I still feel the pain, how my dad was trying very hard to come up with a better solution, a better thing. He couldn't, unfortunately. That was very difficult for him. I was seeing him, how he suffers from that. Of course, he wanted to provide for the family. He was a good man. But those feelings, I don't want it for anyone. I don't want it for myself. Mm. And when I actually was in a driving seat of my life, making decisions for myself, which, for example, program should I study?
Mm-hmm.
Which job should I take? Even when I was thinking of like pursuing a startup, this is a risky decision, right? You know better. I mean, this is not an easy pass. And all of these things, when you think about it, it's very stressful. It's very, because you don't want to, you don't have resources, you don't have time, you want to make improve your life as soon as possible, and you don't have, if you're not coming from a luxury household, mm-hmm. With high financial systems, situations, then you would say, okay, I don't want to also waste my resources, waste my money on there.
Are we still in Iran when you're thinking about those kind of questions, or are we already heading towards Germany? What led you to go to Germany?
No, I think I was in Iran at that time, so the journey was for me, what the way out was studying. So for me, at that very young age, I started studying. So I was part of a school called Exceptional National Talents, stuff like that, fancy names. and then you have entrance exams. So I was really started studying very hard at the age of 9 or 10. And for me, that was, you want to make a change, you need to work hard for it.
Mm-hmm.
And from that young age, I was like really part of this, the culture that I had for, like, yeah, I want to become someone, I want to become an engineer, I kind of become a doctor or something, and then I can actually help my family out of this situation. That was very deep feeling that I had. Yeah.
Mm. And at that point, there wasn't much of information. You're talking a few times, and also in my introduction, I mentioned informed decision-making to prevent mistakes, or trying to prevent mistakes, because we never are able to prevent all the mistakes we're going to make, right? It's always easier to say, said than done, and it's always easier to say in hindsight, yeah, if I knew this or that, but it helps you. The lack of information for you at a very critical stage in your life, what helped you at that point make coming to certain decisions?
Yeah.
Without having the information, what did you do about that?
Yeah, that's true, right? So lack of information actually comes when you talk about international graduates and students. You're talking about the people who packed all their memories into a suitcase and then brought everything here to a new country. You're talking about the people who simply don't know or not aware of the possibilities in this new country. You're talking about the people who don't have a relatives or cousin who have been in this new country to give them insights about how it is like to be in that company, how it is like to be in that university, how it is like to study that program. And that's the fuzzy part comes in. So you have arrived, you have studied, you have built a life here, but then you want to make a decision. For me personally, that was like the moment I was like thinking, yeah, I did my PhD in Germany, I did my postdoc in TUE, Eindhoven University of Technology, and then I knew that I want to do a startup on the side. I knew that I want to do the startup. Initially, it wasn't on the side. It was like, I knew I want to do a startup. And then, of course, you need to think. At some point, I come to a realization. So if I need to make this sustainable, I need to also think of my financials here. And then I had three options, simply going to industry, going to consultancies, going to university, right?
And why didn't you choose either one of the three? Temporarily you do, but why choosing for the startup? Why choosing for the most struggling path forward after enough you've been through yourself? Now you have a PhD. You can easily earn a lot of money. People are in line of hiring you with all your capabilities. And yet, there is something in you where you choose this path.
I get that question I've got that quite a few times. Mm. That's true. I think for me, it is very deep feeling. So, first of all, I have always been passionate about having a startup. But also, the social impact is something very important for me. Even if you look at my research in academia, this is all about increasing sustainability, helping refugee camps, stuff like that. Because I felt like I want to have an impact. And that's a big part for me myself, looking at many international students struggling with their decisions and then trying to find a job in their orientation year that they have, the only limited time that they have to find a job. When I'm thinking deep into it, I think no one wants to make a mistake. Everyone wants to be successful. Everyone wants to make a good decision for their lives. It's the same for me, right? I also want to make a success out of this startup. I want to not only helping people, also helping myself, helping my family whenever I can. I said that from a young age, I had this the feeling that I need to become someone who make the change, who brings the change to the situation of the family. And when you look deep into it, there are painful moments in life that's keeps you going and keeps you be more ambitious about things. I have a very vivid memory of of my mom, actually. During those days that financially was very, very good, she tried to, with whatever cash she had in hand, so she tried to go to stores, to city center, trying to buy something, make a meal out of it. Mm. And in my country, it's not like these big stores, big chain stores. These days, yes, but like 20 years ago, 20 something years ago, it wasn't. So it was like bazaars where you go, there are small stores, everyone have a diversity of foods sorted out there, different prices. So usually, if you want to buy something, you need to check out the prices of a few stores and then compare the qualities to be able to buy something suitable, right? She goes there. She has a bit of money in hand. She goes to different stores. Of course, she needs a few ingredients. She decides on one. Find the one price. Goes to other stores. Compare the other ingredients. Doesn't add up to the money that she has in hand. And she spends a few hours thinking, looking. She gets so frustrated under pressure. She takes a bus, goes home, and cries all the way when she's getting home. This is painful. Not my mom. I don't think anyone should experience this. And I don't want this to happen ever again to my family, to my mom, to my wife. Don't take me wrong. They don't need it anymore. I mean, this is not about that they need this. My wife is a very successful data scientist. She's super smart. She's actually very successful in her career. I'm so proud of her.
Mm, beautiful.
Yeah, of course. She's actually these days supporting me with this startup, right? So that's the thing. It's not about the needing me to do this for them. It's about the love that I have, and I don't want this happen again. I want to be able to provide. This is a very traditional kind of mindset, probably. But I love this feeling.
Traditional? What do you mean by
I mean, this is very, very old-fashioned. Maybe it's the word that might be that being able to provide, right? But this is how I love this.
Yeah, but maybe only because you are a man that you think it's traditional, or you as a person taking care of the family. For me, that's different. It's a different angle.
Yeah, true. If you hear it from a man saying that, it might be old-fashioned, but this is exactly as a human
as
I'm
a
talking.
Human. Yeah,
yes,
yeah,
of
yeah,
course.
Yeah. That's what I hear, and that's knowing you where it comes from. But
yes,
that's
exactly.
Why I stepped in. So
yeah,
okay,
yeah, yeah.
How does it feel to talk about this?
Wow. Vulnerable and also powerful at the same time. What I shared is just something that I haven't shared that very very often. I mean, there are very few people actually know this very deep motivation of me helping me keep moving, because
support. You mean helping you keep moving? Is this also where community for you comes in? Community around you helping you? And for instance, what we spoke about. Do you think?
I meant more around resilience, of
yeah.
course, but that's also a big part. You know, the fact that, again, talking about international people, talking about these people leaving their parents, leaving their siblings behind, leaving their friends behind, leaving their homes behind, coming to a new country, and imagine the first day that they arrive, how lonely they feel. Of course, they are excited about these new opportunities and everything, but there are a lot of learnings, there is a lot of feeling that you need to still fill in, and like feeling of belonging, feeling of support, feeling of, I don't know anything, is there anyone can help me with? These kind of things are very important when it comes to the community, and this is one of the I'm always say Shekson is a community-based platform. It tries to be a community-based platform.
It will be.
It will be, definitely. Yeah, for sure. Where we can increase our network. This is interesting to talk about. This is very also, this is something very recent. So we recently managed to buy a house, Michael.
Mm.
And this is so exciting. But
yeah, you can see that right away.
Yeah, in my face.
makes you, it really, that's really doing something, right?
Yes, because we have come a long journey with my wife. We started from a dorm and then slowly built on that. This is super nice, super.
A dorm, one bedroom and exactly. Separate kitchen and that kind of living situation.
Yes,
yeah.
We started like that in Germany, and now we're developing ourselves through this thing. And this is... this is nice. Of course, it comes with a lot of sacrifices, a lot of effort, a lot of hard working for both of us. But it is very exciting. This is a big achievement for us. But then, even before that, so we were looking for the houses. We bid, we won the bid. We applied for the mortgage. Our mortgage didn't approve the level that we wanted. So we were short. We were quite sad because we loved the house. And then... we said, okay, we want to give up on that. And then our friends called us to do it, like asking what's going on, what's happening, what's the status. And said, oh, we're gonna give it back because we cannot afford it. And they were like, why? Because we said we are short. The mortgage wasn't approved the way that we wanted. And the few of them actually chipped in. Wow. They all chipped in to fill the gap. They said, well, no, we're not let this opportunity just pass by. We're going to help you. We're going to do this for you. Take a year or two to return the money. And then this is like, wow, this is powerful. This is powerful. This is the chosen family. This is...
Yeah.
You... That's why you need community. Not for buying houses, don't take me wrong.
okay.
But the fact is there is many moments that you feel down. You need people who you can trust. You need people who to be around you, to support you. Sometimes just with mental support, sometimes with emotional support, sometimes giving you advice of what you do, what not to do. How to navigate your job market sometimes. And having these people around you feels amazing, feels powerful.
Yeah, I can imagine. And it enables you to buy the house you really love to have, right? And but one question pops up is, how easy was it for you and for your wife to receive the kind of help you received?
Difficult. Very difficult. That was... we were like, we cannot do this. We were like, I was sweating like hell because I raised very independent, even though the situation was not good, but I was raised very independent. I was raised very, the same for my wife and for us, taking those, loans from friends was very difficult at the moment, but it was only possible because they came to us with such a nice attitude that this is how it should be. I initially wanted to give the house back. I want to say I don't want it, but then they were so open, so motivated to help us that their energy kept us going.
Can we unpack a little, because here's really some value for all of us, I believe, because we normally are not very good in general, not very good to receive. There's a book, it's called The Go-Giver, and The Go-Giver is about it's a beautiful book, and there are five laws in it of stratospheric success. And one law is the law of receptivity. And that is about receiving, being able to receive. And we tend to struggle with that. Can we unpack why for you, and also what's interesting, was there a difference in the level of assistant to accept between you and your wife, or were you for kind of the same level? What helped you?
I think about that, we have a very great communication between us, so we usually are very communicative when it comes to these kind of things, so we're usually in the same level when it
and
comes
which
to
feelings
that.
Were in the way.
Yes, exactly. Very similar. Yeah, I think if you, back to what you said, that we are not very good with asking and when it is receiving. And I feel this is happening also in different levels. For example, when you're talking with internationals, so you might say, well, why don't people just don't reach out to successful people on LinkedIn and ask for help, right? And that's the thing. Most of us, we are just, it's very hard to just reach out to someone. Why they should answer us? Why they should waste their time on us? They are a successful woman somewhere or man somewhere. why they should help us. And that's a barrier also we want to get done with it, with the Shexan, to bring people and saying these people are available and willing to support. And all you need to do is to take their hands. And that's something that we try to bring in as a community, to say, look, yeah, there might be people who don't want to help, but these people that we have in our community, they are open to share, they are open to help. Just let's get benefits from the situation. And they are also willing to share because they know the pain. They've already been there. They have been the same dark days they have spent, and they are quite happy to share that. Our next event is coming up, and then I was reaching out to people. I'm trying to select alumni, high-profile people, Michael, high-profile people, stars. And I was reaching out to them, and they were more than happy to support us. This was wonderful, unbelievable.
And this is almost always the case, right? Reaching out and asking, and then we are surprised how much help
and support,
yeah, and how much willingness for people in a certain domain, whatever, there actually is.
True.
So, but this is about the asking part. And for me, personally, the receiving part, without even asking, but just getting something. For instance, these beautiful equipment, I got it from a friend of mine who is an accomplished podcaster. I won't mention his name again. And the first feeling when he opened his trunk and showed the new brand new equipment, and here you are, buddy, for you. I was taken aback. I was like, okay, why? And why me? But it took me almost 1.5 weeks to allow myself to unpack it. And I was like, what's happening here? What's happening inside of me? And yeah. And to be honest, I really was curious. It made me curious. What's standing in the way of receiving a gift of a friend? I'm helping him out quite sometimes, and we love to help each other out. Now receiving a beautiful present, and what's standing in the way? Just open it, being happy, and feel free to start using it. And it took me 1.5, almost 2 weeks to unpack it, and it's a personal story, of course, but I come to the conclusion that why me? Why me? Because underneath for me is feeling, and again, it's a personal story, I'm not projecting anything. It's for me, do I deserve this? Why do I think I deserve this? Who is waiting for another podcast? That was the second challenge. But the first challenge was accepting, the receptivity of getting such a big present without doing anything in it in return. No pressure, buddy, was the message. Awesome. And I had to really dig into, and I'm now 51, so even at 51 we can still learn a lot about ourselves, right? Every day. It was the feeling of not feeling good enough. And why you? Why do you deserve this?
Yeah.
So that's for me the challenging part of receiving, and especially when I didn't ask for something, because I'm not hesitant to ask for anything. I reach out. I have a goal in my head, but receiving without any expectation, and just that was really difficult. It really. It was a challenging thing. Is there something for you resonating in what for me was standing in the way? What was for you? What can we learn and share with the audience? And maybe it's too deep, or maybe. But I think here's a real value, because I think we struggle a lot with receiving.
Yeah, I think very similar feelings, right? So that. Of course, this is something that you feel about. When you were talking, your talks were, what you just said was very much resonating with one of the interviews that I had with one of the students, and she was like, I want to work for this, so she named the company, and she said, well, I really want to work for this company, and there is like people that there that I might be able to connect, and I know she offered me to have a chat with her, but then I'm so scared. Why should she waste her time on me? She's so busy there. What's the chance of this big company, this corporate, hiring me? What's the chance there? So she was so, let's say, underthinking herself, undervaluing herself, that she couldn't see that actually there is some support out there. There is chance to be in that good companies. But she was not feeling to receive that support at that time.
Yeah. Do you think it's about the challenge of feeling deserving?
Not sure.
Huh? I don't know. But it's very in common. I see them quite often and on different levels, and also people with different backgrounds, and also financially well accomplished, but still receiving is a theme for us. And when we look into your story, a lot of challenges along the way, and but you always get back on your feet and you did it anyway. You went through what's helping you building, well, let's say, resilience. What does it mean for you?
Wow, so this is a big topic, right? So I think this is resilience is basically what helping you keep going. And when I think about it in my life, there were many moments that you feel like maybe I cannot do this one. Maybe it is not possible. Maybe it's not just doable. And it is okay if sometimes things are not doable, right? But the thing is, for me, there were always three things, three pillars that build my resilience around going forward. The first pillar for me was the first story that I told you, right? This is about the love that I have for my family and the love that I would like to provide for my family, the love that I want to them to have all the best things that is possible, right? The second thing is I don't believe in chance, but in opportunities. During my PhDs, I had the opportunity of meeting a retired Chinese professor. And he said something that I cannot forget. He said that chance doesn't exist. Luck doesn't exist. So he said, luck, people see something from outside and then say this is luck. But this is not. So he was like, luck is defined as cross-section of opportunity and preparedness.
Opportunity and preparedness, right?
Preparedness, yeah.
Oy, oy, oy.
And he was like, opportunities happen for everyone. But only the ones who are prepared for that can benefit from that. And if you look from outside, you say, this was just luck. He or she was just lucky. But you don't see how he or she was actually prepared for that. So there is another interpretation for that. So I always also say it's like life is like, or luck is basically like surfing.
Mm.
So you need to go somewhere, prepare yourself somewhere, wait for the right wave to surf on that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the opportunity that's arise. But you need to be in that location. You need to be prepared for that. And that's what I always believed in. So there were moments I didn't know what's going to be the outcome of this specific action that I'm doing, but I knew that I'm just preparing myself. I don't know if it's going to work. I don't know if it's going to be good. I don't know if it's going to be any benefit out of that. But I just need to be prepared for that if in case the opportunity arrives. And that's the second one.
Wow. All right. And may I step in for on the second one? Yes, preparedness. And yes, opportunity. But for many, it's a struggle to be able to prepare. What about those people?
Yeah. In what terms do you mean struggle?
Yeah, preparedness. In terms of being, let's say your aim is, I want to be a highly skilled professor in X, Y, Z. Then you have to be able, then you need the opportunities. But preparedness is heavily depending on being able to go to school, proper school, having a meal and a roof out of. So where does that comes in? So I'm not challenging the Chinese retired lecture, but it's more like, okay, I follow you, preparedness and opportunity. Yet what I think is very powerful in what Shexton is trying to do is helping a lot of people becoming able to get to the point of preparedness, right?
Exactly. Yes and no. yes, in a sense that we need to be prepared for the opportunities for the job markets that is going to be open anytime in any of these companies. But nevertheless, those students also need to be good, right? So they need to be having a good grades. They need to be a good student. Mm-hmm. They need to be a good graduates, right? Because when the job is open, there are many people apply, but they're one of them only get that, right? So that's the preparedness comes in. Of course, it requires hard working. I have nothing against what you just said. So there is sometimes that you don't have the luxury of specific opportunities, and that's for sure. But if you have, then you better prepare for it.
Yeah, and this is all about the agency and also the discipline and the grit to be prepared, right?
Exactly.
So not waiting only for, not only waiting for the opportunities to come by, but also almost forcing yourself or nudging yourself or sparking agency in you of becoming prepared.
Yeah, yes.
Okay, that's right. And the third one?
The third one is simply a quote by Franklin Roosevelt, and he says, courage is not the absence of fear, but rather the understanding that something else is more important than fear. This is this quote is with me from a young age. This one is very old with me, and that's where you feel this is something not possible, when you feel terrified, when you feel this is difficult, you feel all of these emotions, and you are close to say, well, maybe this is not for me. And that moment, that the realization that I'm doing this, and actually first acknowledgement of your feeling that I know that I'm terrified. I know that this is going to be scary. This is going to be difficult. I know that. I acknowledge that. But I'm doing this for a bigger reason. I'm doing this for another thing that is more important than my fear.
Beautiful. What comes to mind as the last difficult thing you think you did, which this one came in helpful?
Starting a startup. Believe it or not, Michael, starting a startup was something completely out of my comfort zone. I did my PhD, I did my postdoc, I could have built a much easier career.
And yet we're here as a founder.
As a founder. And this is, there is sacrifices comes to that, right? Financial, of course, time-wise, this is a risk I'm taking. There's a lot of things coming. And I'm terrified as hell. And I'm here anyhow.
All right. And terrified. Sorry, listeners, for the coughing in the microphone. How does that work for you to be afraid and be scared and feel discomfort in your whole body? And you do it anyway. People talk about, yeah, we did it anyway. But what helps you? What do you do?
I do risk assessment. For me, those fears comes from a risk, right? That's the thing that you have. And then what I try to do is that I look at the worst case scenario. I look at, I think there are moments that there are different type of risks that you might go for, right? This is some crazy risks that you might feel, okay, this is very icy road and this is very difficult and I'm going to run on that. So that's crazy.
Run on an icy road. Icy that's road. Crazy.
But then you might actually see that and see, okay, this is icy. I want to go this path. I need to go this path. Then I need to take my steps carefully. And that's what I try to do. So I try to assess the risk, be aware of the risks, and then think, I know this is a risk, but I need to know what's my plan B if something goes off, right? So if something happens, how I'm going to deal with that. So this is how I kind of manage my fear also, in a sense of seeing, okay, how it's going to be, what's the worst case scenario that can happen, how I'm going to react to that, what's my plan, and based on that, you go forward.
Fear is a big word. Many of us, including, of course, myself, experience fear at a certain level, at a certain moment, every day, each day. And is this also what we can find when we're looking for Jackson and when students? Do you think about coaching courses or whatever to help people overcome and do a risk assessment or help them give tools to overcome? Is that also a part of the scope? Where do you think it stops, ends and stops?
Not yet. Maybe one day, but yeah. Not yet. So what we're trying to do right now, I try to duplicate what worked for me. Right. Mm. So when I was in a stage of making a decision, I said I had three opportunities. And what I did, because I didn't know, how does it work if I work for a consultancy part-time? How is it like to be working for a company part-time? But which one I would like more? Which one suits my calendar, my schedule of starting my startup on a side? So what I did was I actually reached out to people in my network. I was very luxury in that sense. I had people in different categories, mm-hmm. and I reached out. They were more than happy to support, talk about their experiences. And that information help me to make an informed decision for myself.
Was it lucky that you have those people around you, or did you create the environment or put yourself in the environment that you have those people around you? Because I don't believe in luck. I really believe in you seized your opportunity, you created an environment. What helped you?
I think I have a character that I would not afraid of reaching out to people. Mm. So I'm asking a lot of questions, and then people are kind enough to answer and help. But also that is something big, because I noticed not everyone is doing that. Mm. Not everyone is willing to ask for that. And that's why we said, well, this works. This worked for me at least. I know that for many others, then let's just scale this. Let's just bring it to the table to offer to everyone who might actually have a small network. Maybe they don't know anyone. And then making this network, this valuable network, available to a bigger community to benefit from it.
Beautiful. We're nearing the end of our, I believe, will be many more episodes to dive deep into the many beautiful things you mentioned. I would love to end with turning it around and ask the question directly to you. Where do you need help?
Wow.
You didn't see that one coming, eh?
Oh, good one. Good one. I think we are starting our first steps at Shaxon. And the first steps are the most difficult ones always. I'm honored to share that our first event is coming up at 29th of November.
Wow.
With a wonderful alumni willing to share. This is also supported with wonderful organizations. I'm going to announce it. It's a surprise. But then we need more support.
29th of November.
29th of November.
And it as soon as you can share something, we will also leave it in the notes within this episode. So I can add it later if you not for now, if it's still in high secret stage. But okay, 29th of the November.
Yes.
And where? Can you?
In Eindhoven.
Ah, cool.
It's going to be placed in person, although our name stands for online. But for now, with the demo, we start with in-person events to see how we can scale that. And for that, we need more support from companies who actually willing to hire more international people, increase their diversity in their teams. There are many challenges that also these companies are facing in terms of writing the right talent, not just in terms of professional talents, but someone who fits their culture and is best for their culture. And what we are offering in our events is not to say, I'm good, but rather let your employees say how they developed in your organization and become a very authentic, nice employer branding. And this is what we are trying to do. So if you are a company listening to this, if you are an alumni, international alumni, knowing that your company is actually willing to exceed on that, feel free to reach out. We need every help, everyone who actually can support us in our journey.
That's a great ask. And where can people find you?
LinkedIn. LinkedIn is the best place. Shaxon is also on LinkedIn and also on Instagram. Reach out, connect, and stay tuned for what's coming next.
Thank you so much, Navid, for your openness, for your vulnerability. I really believe that's one of your superpowers. Keep going, keep being you, and thank you for joining Journeys
My
of
pleasure.
Empowerment. Oh, and one more thing, a quarterly foundation allyship shout out. This quarter, I'm honored to spotlight Fresh Table Foundation, a true pioneer in social impact. Fresh Table is changing the world one meal at a time, empowering former refugees, promoting sustainability and advancing social inclusion through its work. Their vision of an inclusive, equal and sustainable world aligns beautifully with the mission here at Journeys of Empowerment. Join Fresh Table's mission to make an impact. To learn more and support their groundbreaking initiatives, visit freshtablefoundation.nl today. Together, we can make an impact and a difference, meal by meal.